This episode of Spit and Chiclets is brought to you by Sprezza Box. If you ever wear dress socks or work in a corporate environment, then this is the subscription box for you. Every month, they send you 5 to 6 stylish products that are guaranteed to retail for over $100, but your cost, just $25, a fantastic savings. They typically include products such as ties, wallets, sunglasses, watches, and more. Everything is yours to keep, plus shipping is free, and you get a personal stylist. If you're ready to jump on a great deal, go to SprezzaBox.com, that's SprezzaBox.com, and get 20% off your first month's box with a discount code CHICLETS, CHICLETS. Again, that's SprezzaBox.com, and for 20% off your first month's box, use the code CHICLETS. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 21 of Spit and Chiclets, brought to you by Barstool Sports. Say hello, gentlemen.
What's up? I love how you've, like, you now have this, like, separate voice for the intro. It's like a...
My hosting voice? It's funny. I was listening to I randomly stumbled onto one of our early, pre-Barstool eps, and it's... I think I've gotten a little more polished now that you mentioned
Fuck yeah.
Brunelli's here.
Absolutely.
Witz is here. We got former NHLer, current NHL Network analyst, and 2003... Cup clinching goal scorer Mike Rupp.
We are now pleasantly welcomed by my buddy Mike Rupp, NHL analyst and former NHL player, winner of the 2003 Stanley Cup. The first thing I have to ask you, I think you probably knew this was coming, but like to score a goal and two assists in a 3-0 win in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals, what is that honestly like? Like, that's everyone's dream. That's Joe Carter in baseball. Like, forever you have that legend. It's so sick.
Yeah, you know, it's... I think it was something that you don't really embrace or even look at till you're done playing a little bit. And I think sometimes I'm like, holy crap. Like, I mean, I had one other game, I believe, in my career where I had 3 points. And it, for it being one of them being that my first one being in Game 7, it's incredible. But that, you know what, there was, you know how it is, like, where like some nights where you always hear about like the zone in basketball, like you have guys that are in the, it was just weird. Our whole line in that game, it was just like, I mean, we literally could have had probably 2 or 3 more goals in that game. It was just, everything worked perfect. Every bounce went our way. It wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like, you know, I was dancing everyone on the ice and scoring goals and getting assists. Like, we were just playing simple hockey, and Jamie Langenbrunner and Jeff Friesen were my line mates, and I was fortunate enough to play with those guys. They were like probably top 5 in playoff scoring, and Joe Nieuwendyk had to come out of the lineup for injury, and man, I got thrown into a pretty darn good situation, and it worked out.
Yeah, it's thinking back to that team, like, I was, you know, that's, at that point I was 20, so you're not in the NHL, you're close to making it, you're as big as a fan as you can ever be, and I remember that team was so good, but naturally, like, you had spent some of that year in the AHL, and so, like, I had heard of you, but I didn't know, and then to just do that forever, like, you're just thought of as a legend in winning a Stanley Cup game, it's so cool to me, and that line was dominant, but the thing with, like, you getting there, I've always been confused, and I'd like to actually hear your story, is you're a first rounder in 98, so you don't sign, but how do you end up, like, what was that whole scenario like? Did you have a contract offer? Did you not want to go to the Islanders? And then, thank God, I mean, it worked out, the Devils take you, and look what happened, but how did it end up getting there?
Yeah, you know, it would end up being, I was drafted on projection. I mean, if you looked at the guys around me that were drafted, I mean, they're playing junior hockey and they're getting like 120 points, you know, 95 points. I had 27 points in the OHL. And I actually, you know, at that point, like coming up through, you know, I was from born and raised in Cleveland and playing American hockey. Dave Leguan and I were kind of like the 1-2 American born 1980 birth dates. And, you know, I was always a point getter. I was going to go college hockey. I go to the OHL, and although I loved the OHL and it worked out fine, you know, I go to the OHL, you get a 6'5 kid that's 16 years old, and they just try to turn you into a meat stick. And it's like, I didn't develop for like my first 2 years in the OHL. Cause like, hey kid, you got to learn the NHL game. You got to fight. You got to hit. We're going to play you in the fourth line. You got to be an agitator. I'm like, fight. I never fought anything in my life. Like I was just a bully on the ice cause I was so big and I would get points. And, you know, it was kind of tough for me kind of finding what I was going to be as a player, but I got drafted on the projection that I was going to be, you know, this kind of Todd Bertuzzi type player. And, you know, it ended up, well, Todd Bertuzzi minus the sucker punches in the back of heads. Ouch. But they, anyways, they, you know, I got drafted on that. And, you know, when it came around to signing, you know, my agent at the time was telling me, like, you're going to be a, you have the 2 years to sign. He's like, you're going to probably be, you know, signed in 11th hour. So just be prepared for that. So it came down to that. And Mike Milbury was the GM at the time. And
Milbury. You
know, they made me an offer. And I remember my agent came back to me and he's like, you know, for me, I just wanted to get going. Just want to start playing.
Yeah, you're like, hey, I thought this was like foregone conclusion. Like, when are we going here? You don't know when you're that age.
Yeah. And I remember he came back to me and he's like, listen, they made you an offer here, and you know, at the time it was like, you remember how the contracts were back then, where it was like, a lot of it was on bonuses. Like you weren't going to make necessarily on your entry level deal. Like you weren't going to make a bunch in your salary. It was going to be in your bonuses. So I remember they came back, and I guess the Islanders offered like, and the only reason why I'm saying this is to give you context of what shrapnel accepted from the Devils later on. they offered like $450,000 signing bonus. And I was like, wow.
Yeah, man, like, that's incredible. Holy shit.
But all the other guys that got drafted around me, because I was ninth overall, they all were getting $1 million bonus. But I wasn't looking at it that way. I was like, man, that's almost $500,000 right there. That's incredible. And, you know, my agent's like, yeah, they offered you this, but I'm just letting you know that that would be the smallest bonus paid to a top 10 pick ever. And like, I'm like, what? Why you gotta put it that way, man? And nice. So he says that, and he's like, you know what? I'm gonna go back to Milbury and tell him. Actually, no, he didn't tell me that. That's what the problem. That's why I ended up switching agents. And he goes, he's like, you know, I'm like, all right, well, let me talk, you know, let me think about it, whatever. And he goes, well, I already told Milbury. I said, if that's all you're willing to offer Mike, just be prepared to let him go back in the draft. And I'm like, what?
You're like, whoa, hold on, huh?
Yeah.
Like, do I have to do the combine again?
Yeah. You know, and I'm like, you know, I'm an 18-year-old kid, so my dad's involved. And my dad's like, whoa, wait, we didn't, you're telling us you said that? You didn't even check with us. And I'm not saying I would have, you know, accepted that right away or whatever, but I would like to have been informed about it. And so they go back. So we're like, hey, you know, it's literally like a couple hours away from when I'm going to have to be declared to go back in the draft. And we're like, call Milbury, tell him we'll take it. And they call Mike Milbury back, and he wouldn't accept our phone calls. He was pissed. And
what a fucking,
like, we're watching the last hour just tick down. And so I ended up getting drafted third round, and when I went back in the draft by the Devils, and I ended up signing for $150,000 like 2 weeks later. I'm like, wow, sweet transaction right there. Just lost $300,000 because so needless to say, I switched agents, but hey, you know what? We had a good it ended up working out. I went to an organization that takes their time with their players. I needed to be
you need to learn your game. You need to get some skill back in your game after being such a meat in the O.
And that,
as much as I'd want to get thrown into the mix, the Islanders probably would have rushed me along, and I would have never have developed and had to learn the things I needed to learn to play in the league for a long time. And I got to learn that in New Jersey.
Well, Milbury would have traded you to like to another team for like 17 All Stars and 15 number one overall draft picks, and gave them all Alexei Yashin deals too.
That would have been incredible, though, too, right? Like everybody he trades away turns into a stud. Yeah. So that could have been me.
Absolutely,
you would have gone to Detroit and played with everyone, won four cups.
And, you know, going back to piggybacking on the Stanley Cup. You know, the cup clinching goal back in 03, that was no fucking slouch either. Jean-Sebastien Jaguier, who, if I'm not mistaken, won the Conn Smythe that year as a losing team, correct?
Right? Yeah,
yeah. And I mean, he was lights out that series. And you know, I actually could bet the shit out of Anaheim the whole time. So when you guys went head to head, I mean, everyone complains about no scoring, but that series, you know, I know because New Jersey and Anaheim, you know, the people complain, oh, this, you know, they're not old teams or popular teams, but that was one of the truly great series that just shows, you know, you don't need 5-4 and 8-7 games. You could have outstanding goaltender and still make for an absolutely tremendous series.
Yeah, you know, and that was it was always those things that you heard when you're playing in that Devils organization, because even in the minors, you're learning to play. I mean, it was boring. I mean, it was boring to play. Like, I know it was boring to watch.
How about a Sunday 3-3 in the minors?
At the end of the day, you won. And I remember when I got called up, one of the things, they had team bonuses, which they're not allowed, you know, to have now. But Lou Lamoriello's a genius. Like, he would set in these bonuses, and I'd get up to the – so I got called up. My first game was on my birthday, January 13th in 2003. And I, you know, we went on like something silly, like, I don't know, like close to a 10-game win streak or something like that, right when I got called. So I just got called up right in the right time to succeed. And, you know, if it's a losing streak, I get sent back down probably, and who knows where my career goes. So it's all about timing, right? So I'm playing there. And next thing you know, I'm getting these random checks in between paydays. For like a check will be for $2,500, another check for like $3,200, and I remember walking up to one of the guys. I'm like, "Hey, what are these? I don't want to like complain, but like, what are these checks for?" And they're like, "Oh, those are our team bonuses." I'm like, "What are they for?" They're like, "Well, anything after two wins in a row, you get three wins," and I'm probably getting this wrong, but it was like you'd get a bonus. Like, say it was $500, and then if every win consecutively after that. It would double. So if you won,
like
four
KHL
in a row, it
would be up shit. To
1,000. Yeah, and then they're like, for every shutout, each player got like $500. Well, we had fucking Marty Brodeur. Like, shutouts were like piece of cake. Like, wow. One every 10 games, right? And so we're sitting there, and I remember though, and this is genius because we'd be playing in a game, and we'd be up, you know, 4-2. The other team would pull the goalie. There's a minute left in the game. And, you know what, actually scratch that. It would happen. I remember it would blow my mind because we'd be up big. We'd be up like 5-1, no pull goalie at the end of the game. Or maybe there's games where it was 3-0, 4-0, and we're protecting a shutout. And guys are on the bench with like the last minute standing up. They know the payday's coming, you know? And they're like, block the shot, get down. Guys blocking it with their teeth. Like, they're just putting their face in front of it because it's like, that's $500,
those
man.
Guys really love their goalie. They want him to get that shutout, right?
And then it's unbelievable because we literally would be winning in a game 5-0, and you got guys desperately blocking shots the last minute because they don't want to give up that cash. It was awesome, man.
Being on Pittsburgh, no joke, and losing you guys like 5-1, and you guys are going bananas screaming to block shots when we need a power play with 30 seconds. I'm like, these fucking guys are animals.
I mean, it's genius. Hey, you just dangle the old carrot of cash in front of the boys, and they'll do whatever
right.
It takes.
They'll get anyone going, especially the Russians.
Lamoriello, he is. I mean, he sometimes I don't know that he gets the credit he deserves, but he's definitely one of the most brilliant, you know, front office guys that this country's ever produced for sure. Now, I know, Mike, you said you were born and raised in Cleveland. Are there any? I mean, I'm. Maybe in the past, present, not a ton of hockey players come from Cleveland. Are you one of the only NHLers to actually be born and raised in Cleveland?
There was a few born and raised would be, you know, there's...
Cleveland sports teams are good.
Yeah. we would go Brian Holzinger. I don't remember his name.
Bowling Green.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brian Holzinger and Dan Fritchie was another one.
They played for Columbus. He was a high pick,
yeah.
Right?
But Cleveland.
Yeah, he was first or second round pick. Yeah, and he, you know, I'd say us three are probably the ones who, born and raised. I mean, there's some that passed through there. That I don't know. I always see Ian Moran was one that was from Ohio. I don't know if he like was born and raised there or if he was just born there.
Actually, we adopted him.
Yeah,
we adopted him.
Yeah, he came here. Cleveland produced one of the all-time greats, not necessarily in hockey, but Danny Green. How's that name? Does that name ring a bell for you?
Danny Green, yeah.
The Irishman?
Sure,
yeah.
Fighter?
Huh?
Fighter?
No, Irish gangster.
Oh, okay.
No, it's actually there's a movie and a documentary about Danny Green. Yeah, he was an Irish gangster in Cleveland. He just was a maniac, but he's kind of well renowned in Cleveland. I guess if Rupper heard of him, he's probably
well
known.
That's great. Go ahead. So before I get into we get into a couple current NHL questions, what's going on in the league, I have to ask you. I think I know the answer to this too, so I'm going to tell it to Rear Admiral if I get it right. But I'm going to ask you, who is the greatest player that you ever played with?
Greatest player I ever played with.
I know it's putting you on the spot, but you played with some great players.
Was it from one of those seven games Rupper had in Phoenix?
And I'm you know what? Actually, I'm kind of being unfair because I'm not thinking of your Pittsburgh days at the end, but I'm going to go on Jersey. On the Devils.
On Jersey.
Yeah, when you won the Cup, the years after that, who's the best player you played with on Jersey?
The best player in Jersey. I mean, you can easily say Marty Brodeur. I think he'd be there. But, like, Scotty Stevens have to be.
I picked Scotty Niedermeyer.
He struck the fear in his teammates in practice. Like, he was just.
Yeah.
No, he'd get that. And when you watch, too, like, just crazy
he
stuff.
Was
like,
savage.
Scotty has this. I don't notice it now from when I worked with him on NHL Network last year, but Scotty had, like, this little twitch, you know, almost like a nervous, like he you know how you get those, like, some people that kind of give like that extra blink like once in a while, and it's kind of like, whoa, what's up with that guy? And Scotty would sit there, and I remember one of the trainers pointed out to me, and they said when the playoffs roll around, when the big stage is set, Scotty starts getting like really twitchy, like his eyes and his he almost has that little like head bob to the side, like something's not lying, like the wires are crossing. And if you look back when he played in the playoffs, and they show some of those close-ups of him, he gets that going, and it's like, holy shit, what's going down right now. And we all know about his hits and how he's, oh my gosh, he's
thunderous,
altered guys' career.
The YouTube clip where he like is telling the guy you're next, and he's like kissing his shoulder. You got a YouTube Scott Stevens, that one pops up. He was just straight up savage.
Yeah, he was nuts, but he's like most soft-spoken guy in the room. And I remember my rookie year, we'd go to the practice rink in West Orange, New Jersey, and like, you know, as a young guy, you know, like if you have to be at the rink at 9:30, like I'm going like, you know, 75 miles an hour on the back roads trying to get to the rink on time, because it's like, you know, you're just a dumb kid and you sleep as long as you can, and you're eating McDonald's on the way to practice. And I come cruising in, and Scotty would get there so early in the morning. I remember the one time he had a truck, and I come walking into practice, and I'm like just like running in the parking lot to get in there on time. And I look, and there's just like this bloody deer carcass laying in the back of this truck. I'm like, what the hell is this? And I walk in the rink, and I go in the changing room, and there's like all of his hunting gear, camo gear up in his stall. And I'm like, dude, what? This guy just go hunting on the way in? And guys were like, oh my gosh, he's an animal. Like, he just goes like 5 a.m. before practice and just Jesus. Rips down whatever carcass he can, throw it in the back of his truck. And then guys were joking around, like, he was so obsessed with it that, you know, guys would live in like nice developments in residential areas, and they'd be like, I'm going to practice, be like, hey, Scotty, you should see these deer trekking through my yard every morning. He's like, really? Well, what time? Do you mind if I come over? Like, Scott, you can't shoot them.
Right? There's kids in the neighborhood, right, Scott, for Christ's sake.
Do you mind if I come to your yard and kill
like
animals?
He'd show up at he'd want to go to their house and pop this deer in, you know, basically a little, I don't even want to call it a suburb. I mean, it's right outside Newark. And it's like, dude, Scotty, you can't do that there, buddy. He's just nuts.
My quick question for you. I'm a big celebration guy. I love the celly. 2012 Winter Classic. You scored a goal, and then you did the Jager salute. Is that something you thought about before the game, and you were like, all right, I'm going to Jager salute? Or is that something that, you know, kind of just in the moment because, you know, you saw Jager on the other bench?
Yeah, no, it was nothing that, you know, I always get asked that, like, is this something you thought about before? Like, I mean, I didn't score enough goals to be like, when I score today, I'm going to do this thing. You know? I mean, come on. And so, you know what? I loved playing against Philly. I mean, I grew up in the Devils organization. We hated Philly. I went to Pittsburgh. They hated Philly. I go to the Rangers. We hate Philly as well. So it's like I've grown to, and one of the things that Philly had always drove me nuts is like, you know, the fans like don't even care if the team wins. If they get a good scrap in the game, they get their appetites, you know, good, and they're going home happy. And I used to always think to myself, like, whenever you went into Philly, it was like, I felt like the team needed to lean on me a little bit more, because it was like, you know, it's not the Broad Street Bully days anymore, but it even today, like, the game's changed so much, but it's like, oh, Philly, gonna be a tough game.
Yep.
It's like, what? That team ain't, like, they got Wayne Simmons, who's an animal. I love him. I love the way he plays, but like, come on, man. Like they got to shed that, you know, there's like the stigma, you go into Philly, it's gonna be a long night. So I'd always like use that as something to kind of, you know, go out there and compete against these guys. And I love, the best thing about playing Philly too is when you win and you're leaving and you got those nasty Philly cheesesteaks that they think are so good, and you're eating them on the bus on the way out, and you're coming out of the, you're coming up the ramp, and it's like the fans outside are like shooting the moon, throwing things at the bus.
Oh, I used to flip them right, the bird right back. No, they'd be flipping up off, just giving it back to them.
And it's right.
Yeah, you yell up to the bus, you pop the lights on, and all the guys are giving them the fingers, doing the suck it sign, and like just doing everything to the fans, because the you know what? I love pissing off the Philly fans. It's so easy to do. We're playing at Citizens Bank Park, and it's like, you know, we're down in the game. We're down 2-1 or 2-0. And so I get this goal. I don't know. It just happened. I just love to piss off the Philly crowd. And, you know, it's really funny, though. It's so this dates back a couple weeks ago. It's like, you know, from then on, everyone's like, even in that game, you know, and quite frankly, it worked. I got under the skin of their guys. I remember we're winning in the game later on in the game. And as soon as it happened, Scott Hartnell was chirping me, saying I'm disrespectful. And I'm like, disrespectful, man. We're playing hockey. Like, shut up.
Like, you know, Hartsy, what have you done before?
Yeah, that's
the thing. Yeah. Like, and so I'm taking a face off late in the game, and Claude Giroux's like leans over on the wing, and Giroux, like, not even paying attention to the draw. The ref's getting ready to drop the puck, and he's like yelling at me about how disrespectful that was. And
there's
whatever.
A clip of it online.
So it worked, man. I got Claude Giroux talking about me instead of thinking about, you know, scoring a goal. I was happy I did it. And so after the game, I got asked about it. I kind of played it off. I'm like, nah, that's my celly. I did that since I was a kid in Cleveland. Like, oh, Jager, that's his. Oh, I didn't know that. You know, just kind of played it off.
Can
stupid.
Can I do that? little Urkel answer. But yeah. No, you're right though. Philly is, it is funny. Like, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry. I didn't.
No. So I was in at the All-Star game this year. You know, and ever since then, I was like, you know what? I should probably reach out to Yags and just like say, hey, man, like that's nothing personal. It's just like that's the role I played in.
Yeah, you like, know, dude, I wasn't like making fun of you. Yeah. What are you talking? Like, people got upset at that. Like, come on.
Yeah. Great. And then so some time passed, and I, like, you know, I actually got his number from someone, and I kind of, you know, I didn't really want to do it. Like, I wanted to do it because I didn't want him to think. I wasn't being disrespectful to him, but I was kind of like, then as I started thinking about it, I'm like, listen, Yags is like one of the greatest players ever. He's probably going to be like, who? I don't remember that. Like, who cares?
Yeah,
you know what
yeah.
I mean? So I just kind of dropped it. So at the All-Star game this year in L.A., we're walking in the lobby, and me and Tony Luffman, who I work with at NHL Network here, we're walking in the lobby going up to our room in the hotel, and all of a sudden Yags comes walking around the corner, and he goes to get in the elevator. So I kind of put my hand across Tony. I'm like, just hold on a second. He's like, why, what's up? I'm like, yeah, Yags is going to the elevator. I don't feel like talking right now about this crap and, you know, whatever. So he's like, all right, cool. So anyways, I go, let him go up. I go up the elevator, go to my room. I got to return a rental car that I rented out in LA. And so like 20 minutes later, I drive the rental car back to this rental car place, like 2 miles down the road. I come walking in the rental car place, and sure as hell, Yags is sitting in a chair right there. And I'm like, son of a bitch. And I walk in, I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, Yags probably thought you worked for like Enterprise though.
So I come walking in, and he kind of turns and look, and I'm like, hey, yeah, it's all right. I'm like, shake his hand. He's like, hey, Rupert, how are you? And I'm like, okay, cool. The guy knows my name. And so he goes, this is funny. He goes, hey, man, good stuff. You guys are really good. I like you on NHL Network. And I'm like, well, man, that means a lot coming from you. I appreciate that. Thanks. And
He goes, yeah. He's like, you're way better at that than you were a hockey player. Like, you should have a bitch. Really the jab. So I'm like, all right, cool, man. I'm like, no, fair enough. And he's like, no, I'm just messing with you, blah, blah, blah. So then we're standing there. It's kind of like this elephant in the room. Like, I'm letting him take care of his rental car business. And then I'm like, I got to say something to the guy. So I go, hey, Yox, man, listen, I just want to mention you. I got your number a while back, and I kind of just put it off. And, you know, that whole stuff that went on, like, you know, that's nothing. No discredit to you. And he's like, oh, don't worry about it, man. He's like, I'm glad someone could do it. I was hurt that game and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So it was good. It felt good to kind of get that out of the way.
That's unreal. Yager was such a legend. I actually heard this year that with Florida, he said some, like, young kid put money on the board if they won the game. You know, naturally, first game, you're going to put – I don't know if it was his first game, but he put money on the board either way. And Yaga goes, make sure you collect that because he's going to get sent down tomorrow. Just gives it to guys.
All right, Rupp, I know you got to run for a meeting very shortly. Just I know guys don't like to be put on the spot with predictions, but give us who you think will be the final four. Do a little something different. Who do you think will be the final four teams, two on each side left in the for the playoffs this year?
Oh, man, that's tough because I think that in the East –
I got Washington. I've had them all year, Rupper. I've had them all year.
I actually think this was the year for Washington.
Same here.
I think because, and.
But playing Pittsburgh's still going to be so hard.
I want to say Pitt and Wash, but we know that's not going to happen.
I know, that sucks.
Format. So I would I'd probably say Wash. I think if the Rangers can get that fourth spot in the Metro, that would put them in the Atlantic side.
Yeah, could happen.
I don't know.
I
think the Rangers could come out. I don't know. But then it's like, how can you count out the Pens? Like, I don't know. The Pens to me too. But I don't know. I just really think Wash, this is their year. So I think that's in the East and out West. To me, it's all going to be all about, can Minnesota finally slay that dragon of Chicago in the playoffs?
Hey,
I love that team.
Minnesota has to beat Chicago. Like Washington has to beat Pittsburgh. They haven't been able to. Like, will it finally happen? I don't know. It's tough to pick against them, but it has to at some point. But I don't think Minnesota would beat Chicago. I think Washington would beat Pittsburgh, though.
So, all right. So,
I agree with that. I would probably say Chicago. I'd probably say Chicago, and I don't know. I think San Jose's got an opportunity to get back, too.
Good. Yeah, that's a good call. All right, Rapa. Well,
thank you so much, buddy. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. I know it was kind of last minute, and I know you're a busy man. So thanks for coming on, Rapa. We'll definitely have you back again. We'll talk a little bit more about the playoffs when they roll around.
What a great interview. He's just very, he goes in depth to
very
things.
Very loquacious fella. Good stories.
Good storyteller.
He had a couple good ones.
We'll have him on again for sure around playoff time.
First off, I just got back from Toronto. Fortunately, nobody mistook me for Ryan Whitney in Edmonton.
I would jump off a bridge if that happened.
Some stones thrown at me. To get you up to speed, we're going to play the audio in a sec. Wits and our boy Armdog, Colby Armstrong, were on with our other friend of the show, Jeff Marek, up in Canada. And old Armstrong told a story about Ryan Smith, and we're going to cut the audio now to get everybody up to speed.
A Ryan Smith story. So he leaves and goes from Edmonton to the Islanders the year before. I'm with Atlanta, now playing him the next year. He's in Colorado.
Yep.
And we're all sitting on the bench, and he lines up for the faceoff in front of us, and our whole bench at the same time.
No.
16 guys were making fun of him for crying. And then one guy goes, we're bringing the cup back to Edmonton.
No, that's relentless. This is the video that Colby was referencing, the trade deadline 207.
And win that cup so I can bring it down here in Edmonton. That's where my heart is.
Bring the cup back to what'd you think? Dennis Potvin and Billy Smith were still in it? I think the Islanders were going to win the cup.
I told Horkoff I wouldn't do this.
tender moments we've seen.
I know. He should have told the story, but it's a funny story. No. In-game chirp.
Okay. City of Edmonton. Great place. Honestly, great place to play hockey. People care. That's all you can ask for. Fans are great. They're insane, but in a good and a bad way. Now, the video, there's a video to that that we can tweet out, and it's different when you can see our faces, mm-hmm. right? So I want to be accurate. So, you know, me doing a crying face and Armstrong doing it, it made it look a little worse. And showing the video of Ryan Smith, if we had just told the story without showing the video of Ryan Smith and showing him crying, I think it wouldn't have looked as bad to people. But, oh my God, what is wrong with some of you people from Edmonton? It was a joke. Nothing was ever said about Ryan Smith's career or accomplishments or what he did for the city of Edmonton. He had five times the career of me and Colby Armstrong combined. We both have respect for him as a player. The guy was a great player who played hard for a long time. We were fucking laughing at him for crying. Do you guys know who the most famous basketball player of all time is?
Michael Jordan.
Do you know that now there's a
crying Jordan meme? Right. If you Google Michael Jordan, that comes up first, by the way.
Do you know that Tom Brady cried in the documentary of being the seventh quarterback?
That awful
and
salad.
Did people laugh at him for crying?
Nope.
It was a story. The whole thing started. When Colby Armstrong and I and Jeff Merrick host at Sportsnet, I think we do a good job. We're buddies and we play together and we both like telling stories, and there's some that can be told and some that shouldn't be told.
Yep.
But that's entertaining to hockey fans.
That was an on-ice chirp.
So we're trying to figure out what we wanted to do before the show in terms of a intermission report. It was, and we were talking about on-ice chirps. Did you ever say anything, like, you know, just stuff that was said that guys would say against each other? That happens 100 times a game. Or you know, so Armstrong mentioned that story. I was like, that's hilarious. Because when Ryan Smith, listen, I'm going to be honest. When Ryan Smith did get traded from Edmonton and he went to the Islanders that year, and then that summer he signed with Colorado, he turned down a contract offer of the Oilers for probably $1 million more than he got from Colorado. Like, okay, so Edmonton people, Ryan, like I've said, Ryan Smith's an amazing player, but to all of you people telling me how bad he wanted to be there and that thing, like, don't fool yourself. It was when you get $35 million instead of $33.3 million. Let's be honest, you didn't want to be there that bad.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that's part of this. The second part is that he was going to the Islanders, who were battling to try to get in the playoffs. They weren't going to win the Stanley Cup, and he was crying like, I'm going to bring the cup back. Like, it was just, to me, like, maybe it's the Boston sense of humor in me,
right?
And I understand that. That's funny to me. Like, I and some of these tweets people are sending, calling me a bully.
The thread, oh my God. the threads in your tweets are ridiculous.
Let me read you a couple of these. You guys should be ashamed of yourselves. What cruelty you showed.
Mean tweets.
The way you acted, you're as bad as Trump. So disappointed in you and Colby Armstrong. Ryan Smith has more class in his pinky toe than both of you could buy. Hashtag Smith. Hey, this one. Unbelievable. Imagine being this fucking guy sitting in his sitting wherever he's sitting. Not even his basement.
Let's pretend.
Do you guys know who Gord Downie is?
Gord Downie is the lead singer of the Tragically
Hip. Yep, they're an amazing band. He's
terminally ill.
He's terminally ill, and he gave a concert at the end of the year in Toronto, and it's been incredible.
Yeah. It was amazing.
Hey, Ryan Whitney Six, you scumbag. What are you going to do, make fun of Gord Downie next weekend?
Holy fuck. Wow, that's a psychotic person.
Because you made
fun of a hockey player crying at a press conference.
Whitney, you scumbag piece of shit. If Sportsnet has any integrity, there'll be a public apology. It just showed immaturity. I'd be embarrassed.
Sorry.
I'd be embarrassed.
Sorry.
Do they just hate you? Do they hate you, or is it Ryan Smith? Do they just think he's the great one?
They don't like me.
They worship.
They didn't like me. I didn't play well there. I 100% understand why they didn't like me. But they worship Ryan Smith. And I get it. Whatever. I get it. The guy played for the Oilers forever. I mean, but we were laughing at him crying when he got traded. Like, everyone, calm down. It's talking about, this is what people say. You know, you want to hear what we want to hear stories from players. And, you know, we have, hearing stories from when players played is so great. And they're fun. Even for me, I played. And then you're talking about On Ice chirps, and that's what happens. The whole team fake crying. Right. It's hilarious. They were all laughing. And then these people are appalled at the story. Like, and I got a bunch of, you that should stay on the ice. What?
Yeah.
Why should that stay on the ice? It's funny. Nobody got hurt. Like, what? The guy, in the end of this, he signed with Colorado for $33 million. Do you think anyone's feelings were hurt over this?
Fucking right. It's funny. Me and Marek talked about that. Jeff Marek up at, he gave me the tour of Hockey Night in Canada Studios. And I said, did people realize it was a story that happened on ice? Like, the whole team was making fun of Ryan Smith. Andog just told the story. It was like nobody got, like I said, nobody got hurt. It was a.
How's he feel about it, Ryan Smith?
I played with Smith. He's a good guy. I saw a quote. I'm not going to stoop to their level. Stoop to their level. Because we're just like making fun of you, crying. Like what?
Right.
When did everyone get so sensitive?
It's not that.
Holy shit!
It wasn't that you were making fun of him crying. It's like the whole fucking team that Army was on at the time made fun of him at the dot. That's hilarious. Like, if that was in Slapshot, it would have been an epic fucking scene. Like, the whole team.
The fact that a whole team would be fake exactly, crying on the bench is fucking hilarious. Like, Army had never told me that story. And Armstrong feels horrendous. He's from Western Canada. I'm like, dude, we didn't. All these people just don't. I've been compliment of the Oilers this year. I like where they're going. I said they deserve to be in the playoffs. Their fans deserve it. Just relax. And holy shit.
And I think,
too, go have a beer.
We should point out, too, and remind people that, you know, we're talking about Edmonton fans who are online and on Twitter specifically. You know, I mean, you know, I know they're very passionate, but it's not the whole.
I understand. I'm talking about the people who write. I'm not apologizing. I'm saying I mean, I'm sorry you disagree. I just thought it was funny. I wasn't bullying anyone.
I think the people that deserve to get chirped in this whole situation is the chirpers, the people who are coming at you. Because
Maybe we can tweet them out on Spit and Chicklets.
I'll start retweeting them.
No, I got a great idea. No one has ever done this before. We'll find the meanest tweets on, then we'll have Ryan read mean tweets. No one has ever done that.
Genius.
Well, I thought these were interesting. Yeah, that's very true, though.
Oh, shit.
I had to address that.
No, you're right.
It was a joke. Yeah, we were kidding around.
Oversensitive
lighting
fans,
up Francis.
They love Smitty, but if you're gonna be mad at the guys who made fun of him on the
nothing to do
ice,
with Smitty
right?
as a person or a player.
Nope, never.
That's what I'm sticking to.
Never attacked him. So all right, so Whitney gets his piece out on Edmonton. We do got a little bit of a shorter episode this week, time constraints and whatnot. So we're gonna jump right into lovely
right
segment
Hamilton.
Of All Right Hamilton with the boys.
All right, so by RA's request, number one is T-Smitty724 asked...
Smitty?
Smitty.
TK421.
Smitty.
He made a new one. Made a new account to write us a question.
He's coming at you.
Why is Witt a bully?
Why do all teams play soccer in the hallway before games? This is by RA's request.
All right, Hamilton.
And now the answer is an easy one. It's to limber up, get loose, maybe get a little sweat and loosen up before the game. But
is that why?
Isn't it? No. I know. Unless you're...
Honestly, I think a lot of it has to do with getting loose and it's Euros, love soccer.
Right.
You're right. I'm just giving you shit because I love it.
Interesting story that it stands out every time I see a pregame soccer game. When I was in Vancouver and for Game 7 in 2011, Bruins Canucks.
I think they're coming to an end that we'll get into, but go ahead.
Because
people have been getting hurt. People get hurt.
So I'm walking around. I got in the arena early because I really had nothing to do. I was in probably a couple hours before the game, just checking it out. You know, I was walking around the arena, and I walked by the Sedins. I mean, literally, like, from me to you away. And they're doing their pregame thing, and they're very like tense. That you know, there was not one smile. They were doing their pregame soccer, not one smile. They're just all tense. I go down fucking 50 feet down the hall. Hey, rah, 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 here, roaring and yelling and screaming. I'm like, what the fuck's going on? And it's the Bruins, dude. And it looked like they were at a Delta Tau Chi party. Like, there was...
No, those things, it's true. They do get fun. I never played because I'm so bad I couldn't even juggle it once. But they guys love it. It's a knockout game. And it does get you fired up and loose and shit.
But the point is, because I already had money on the Bees. But right then, I'm like, fucking Vancouver's dead. They weren't relaxed at all.
That's kind of a hot take.
It is
a little bit.
Well, I mean, hey, look how it played out, though. I mean, Vancouver played
tense. No, this one you're 100% right.
The Bruins were loosey-goosey. But anyways,
if the Avs are loosey-goosey versus the Capitals coming up here.
Well, again, it's Game 7, you know, you think, you know, I was basically to see the dichotomy up close. Like, these guys are fucking... tight with fear.
I know exactly.
And these guys
what
are playing
saying.
With house money, and it was like it was cool because not everybody got to see it. So
I completely, see that. I completely, I just love giving it to you. But you're right.
I love
right.
taking it. All right, next up, Grinnell.
All right, Kyle Caraccio asked, "What do you guys think about Hosang wearing number 66?"
All right, Hamilton.
I'm not even. I'm disgusted. I don't even. Like, what do you do? And I, you know,
dude,
what?
It's Whitney's boy.
I saw. That's my owner, who I sat in his private plane's bathroom for an All Star game.
Humble brag.
I got his autograph. I saw Doug Waite come out and say, "Listen, he's honoring him. He's doing it to honor Lemieux." So, I mean, it's his head coach. I love Doug Waite. I don't know him, but just as an American, so I kind of don't. I'm not as mad anymore. But for me, it's just like, dude, Nicholas Backstrom. He played in the KHL and wore 99, like 99 and 66. I guess you got to retire if you're the league if you don't want anyone to wear it. But to me, I don't know. I wouldn't wear it.
Exactly. He can wear it.
It's the
like,
great one.
I mean, I'm not.
Oh no. The magnificent one.
No, we're not cutting that. We're not fucking cutting that at all. Fucking Zoma, those
if
checks.
You, if
those
you
checks
know me,
that
is exactly what. That's why I can't believe I have a podcast, because that's a very common thing.
Wow. Now we're gonna go to the great one,
Mario Lemieux.
Mario Lemieux. The yeah, I don't. I mean, basically, you're just kind of putting a fucking microscope on yourself by wearing 66. People obviously know you're not Lemieux, but they're gonna expect you to play at a certain level. And you know,
yeah,
when
you got to have a level of I don't give a fuck to
right.
do it.
Yeah, and like you said, if the number's not retired by the league, sure, he can wear it. I mean, it, you know, if it's my team, I'm like, who the fuck's this guy? Got some serious balls. That's what I tweeted. He's got some balls doing it, but at the end of the day, if he's a player, he's a player. But, you know, whatever. Not my cup of tea. Grinnell's.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really care, to be honest.
Grinnell's, yeah. You don't care. As long as you're sniping.
Yeah. He's doing dangles and snipies and not wearing condoms.
As long as you're sniping and whacking.
Condoms of a sailor.
As long as you're sniping and thumping girls, you're in good in Mikey G's book.
Keep that's that swag coming.
All right. So, fuck you guys. Hilarious. So Zach asks, ZD91 asks, do the boys tear it up one last night after the season wraps up or book the first flights out?
All right, Hamilton.
Oh, they don't tear one last
Vegas,
night.
Vegas, baby.
Yeah, a lot of times you go to Vegas, unless you're playing somewhere really nice. But when the season ends, you don't make the playoffs, it's go time for a couple nights. Guys love it. Yeah. I remember one year, my first year, the team in Pittsburgh, we were really bad, Crosby's rookie year, but I was going back down to play in the AHL playoffs for Wilkes-Barre because I had started the year there, and everyone was getting ready for their nights out and going away, and I was going back to play in the AHL playoffs. I was like, fuck! And we won the first round at Game 7. I was like, no! it's so bad. Fuck.
Just rule number one.
But if you play in the NHL a year, you're not dying to get back there.
If you do the Vegas thing with your teammates, just rule number one, when the sign at the pool says do not bring drugs in your bathing suit, I gotta check your bathing suit, obey that fucking rule. No names, but just obey that rule. Alright, so yeah, I'm going to squeeze in a quick Ask a Millennial. Now, I was up Toronto this week. I'm going to elaborate on that a little bit. I was able to go to the CBC studios, start iconic sceneries, a lot of stuff, Canadian culture. Canada, by the way, has produced some unbelievable comedians. And I was fortunate to go to CBC where they filmed a little show called SCTV. So Ask a Millennial. Ryan, do you know what SCTV is?
SCTV. No, I don't even.
Brunelli, I don't even know I'm going to turn and face your way, but it's part of the routine. SCTV.
Sports Canada TV.
Will I know it now that you say it or no?
No, SCTV was a show up in Canada that had John Candy. I'm looking for the picture right here. Here it is. John Candy, the McKenzie brothers, Eugene Levy, Joe Flaherty.
How much
Flaherty,
do you love this, Mitch?
Rick Moranis. No, basically, it was Canadian Saturday Night Live, basically. It was the Canadian version of Saturday Night Live. It's hugely popular. Again, Canada, I know we have a lot of fun with Canada. We love Canada. They produced some tremendous comedians over the years.
Never heard of it.
Yeah,
never
SCTV
heard of it.
Show. That's a quickie. Ask a Millennial.
Somebody asked me, or they wrote All Right Hamilton, but I was on it, the best prank that I saw. And I saw a bunch of them, but the one that Ryan Malone did to me, oh, Bugsy Malone, that fucking asshole.
Let's hear it.
We had rookie party in New York City, so we had a day game, and we actually got pumped 7-0. It was awful, but we were going out that night and having rookie party. And so after the game, Therrien had meetings with every guy on the team, I think, except for like three guys, and you just sat there and waited for your meeting, and then he ripped on you because we got pumped so bad, and he knew we were going out for rookie party, so he was just furious. And I get out and everyone's kind of waiting around. I'm getting out of the shower and everyone's like waiting around, kind of laughing. Like, look at me. I'm like, what? They're like, you haven't seen your shoes? I'm like, where are my shoes? Fuck, because I got my suit on. Malone had spray painted them fluorescent blue. They were brand new, like $600 dress shoes for my suit. He spray painted them fluorescent blue, and in yellow or black, he'd written 19 on the toes. And that's all I had to go out at a rookie party. I was like, oh my God. But classic New York City, some fucking guy came up to me at, like, in the bar or the club. He's like, dude, where'd you get those shoes? Those are sick. I'm like,
that's it. Oh, fucking yeah,
the Bugsy Malone line sold at Kmart.
I want to hear about Toronto, man.
Okay.
Let's hear about Toronto.
Yeah, absolutely. Toronto, now, you know when sometimes you go on a vacation, like, and you get banged up, you have a lot of fun, and then you need a vacation after that vacation? Well, that's kind of like what happened with Manhattan. We had a lot of fun down there. We worked hard. We played hard. But I come home, I was fucking exhausted after four nights down there. So Toronto was kind of a little like relaxation weekend for me. I went up again, in case you forgot, for the Goon 2 premiere. Goon was very popular cult comedy about with starring Sean William Scott, who was Stifler.
By Jay Baruchel.
Jay Baruchel. Actually, Jay produced and wrote the first one, but he directed the sequel. Yeah, me and Jay kind of became internet buddies a few years ago, and he was kind enough to invite me to the premiere of the first Goon, and kept his word. He said, if there's a sequel, I'll invite you to that one too. So that was the reason I went up. Just honestly, it was a very relaxing weekend. I was up there by myself. Didn't do a hell of a lot.
Canada seems like a relaxing place.
I actually sat in Tim Hortons one day, and the Canadians, I don't think they say excuse me. I think they just say sorry. And honestly, like, after the PMT stuff, you just can't get out of your head. Like, I think I was like intentionally bumping into people just so I can get like sorries out of them at Tim Hortons. But Toronto, if you've never been there, fantastic city. Reminds me a lot of Chicago, Grinnelli, in so far as it's a beautiful city.
Clean.
Clean as fuck.
Oh, okay.
Right on the lake. Yeah, all kinds of condo towers. I mean, it's got a New York vibe, too, to it. It's, you know, a big, major metropolitan city. But I get a real Chicago vibe out of Toronto. Very diverse city. Very, you know, it's just a very friendly city. I heard one car horn all weekend from, like, people beeping in traffic. They stop at yellow lights. They obey the traffic laws. So that took a lot of
crazy stories. You got to have some crazy stories.
Okay.
That you can tell on here.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it crazy. This is probably more a reflection of me getting old. But this was a funny one. Now, I'm at the Hotel Chelsea. Nice hotel, kind of right off of Yonge Street, which is the main drag there. And I'm on my balcony, and, you know, I see this, like, you know, it was almost like a beacon of the night, like a lighthouse.
Oh, I think you tweeted a picture of it.
I believe I did. It was a old, like a naked lady, a neon thing. And it was like, it was like a beacon in the night flashing me. But so I text, you know, a guy or two, like, hey, what's the Zanzibar place like? And like, I don't know. I don't go to titty bars. And honestly, I don't. I could count on a half a hand how many times I've been to a strip joint in the last fucking 20 years.
Huge strip club guy.
I was, you know, we used to go when we were 18, 19, we used to go to Montreal 7 times a summer back in the day. You know, whatever. You get old, things change, interests change, whatever. So fucking, this place is calling. I'm like, I'm all set with that. You know, like, whatever. Fucking, what am I going to go blow money in there? So Sunday night, I decided to treat myself to a nice dinner. Frascati. By the way, Toronto listeners, I don't know if you know about it, on Elm Street. Fucking fantastic little restaurant. So I went there, forget a bite to eat, slugged back a half a carafe in about a half hour. So I got a pretty good glow on. And I'm walking by, and I'm back to the hotel. What do I see? That neon sign for Zanzibar. I'm like, fuck it, I'll walk in there. Now, first clue right away that I wasn't preparing to go into a strip joint. I didn't have my glasses. And right away I walk in, I'm like, I don't have my glasses. So, like, fucking useless. So then I'm like, all right, well, you know, well, you can always get a fucking up close dance if you want a better view. You know, I get down, I sit down, and this fucking broad next comes up to me, like fake flips, like on her face, big, like plump fake lips. And she's like, sounds like she's auditioning for like a Bond villain girlfriend in the next world. Hello, Babushka, would you like a private dance? And I'm like, right away, I'm like turned off. So I was like, you know, but I'm playing along. If this is shit like 40 years, 20 years ago, I would have been like all in right away. But now I'm like, I know I'm not getting a private dance. Not interested. Ordered one beer. I'm just like going to finish it and screw. She's like, well, you like dance? I was like, how much? She was like, the one song, $20. I was like, you know, now I'm definitely.
Why not?
No. Now I'm like, I'm thinking fucking $20. I'm like looking at
it. It's a going rate.
Dude. Fucking, when I first went to Montreal, $5 at Club Chez Paridou with, and those are the girls are really students there. They're all nines and tens. And they're beautiful. So anyways, I'm not a cheap fuck, but I'm like, I ain't spending $20. But then she drops this one on me. We have to go to the VIP room, or the champagne room.
And that's another $20 cover. Just, oh, but you can go in and out all night. So I said, so basically, you're telling me fucking $40 is going to cost me just to get the first dance.
And
just,
that's only like 2.5 minutes, three
and
minutes.
I'm like, what are you going to play me, a fucking Buddy Holly song that's 2 minutes long? I'm like, I want to hear Bonzo's Montreux or fucking Inagata DeVita if I'm paying $20 for a fucking, for a song. So, you know, I sat there. I saw, you know, I'm going to have my beer and contemplate it, like knowing full well. And then another one come over. She looked like she was on about fucking 19 perk 30s because she had dime slots for eyes. Like, So right away, I'm just like, I'm all set. Like, if it was a place for, like, you know, smokes or like Shapery, dude. I mean, probably the best strip joint you can go to in North America. Just beautiful women who seem to have their fucking head about them. They're not whacked out on drugs or whatever. So I went in, had like half a beer, and I was like, all right. This was a fucking
later.
Shit. Well, later, dude. I don't know if it's a condition of me getting older or whatever, or it was just not a very good place, but.
So, well, let me ask you.
Yeah.
Hockey Night in Canada Studios.
Oh, yeah.
You got to tell me about that.
It was great stuff. And again, we've mentioned him already. Jeff Marek. If you're not following him on Twitter, you should be. I'm trying to think of an American equivalent of Marek, because he's fucking huge in Canada.
Maybe Steve Levy here, or
maybe Bucci. Bucci, maybe.
I would say.
So, you know, he obviously does a show with Whitney up there, and he's also does a podcast with Greg Wyshynski, Puck Daddy. So he reached out and said, hey, you know, you want a tour of the studios? You fucking kidding me? Of course. You know, I mean, obviously we don't get Hockey Night in Canada. Well, we get it recently thanks to satellite and stuff, but it's such an iconic fucking thing, man.
Absolutely.
Like, and they actually built this whole new studio a couple of years ago. I mean, they spent like $3 million. You know, a lot of these studios, Mike, you know, you walk in and it's a shoebox.
Oh, my God,
It just looks bigger on TV because of the lighting and the staging. But this thing was enormous. The set was fucking huge. And we got there, and there was no lights on or nothing. Marek had the lights turned on so I could take some pictures, got the full tour. I mean, it was a thrill, man. It was a real thrill to see, you know, this is what fucking the whole of Canada watches this shit every fucking night.
That's work for Whit and Marek every day.
Yeah, exactly. So, and he gave me a tour of the facilities. And like I said, you know, like we mentioned SCTV and the a couple of minutes ago. I know you guys obviously don't remember, but it's such an iconic show. I mean, it really is sort of SNL's equivalent. I'm sorry, Canada's equivalent of SNL. So we didn't actually get to the studio. I think the door was locked.
You said John Candy was on it?
John Candy, Rick Moranis, Dave Thomas. So many iconic Canadian comedians. Yeah, that makes sense. So it was fun. I didn't really get too banged up or anything. It is funny that when you get in the plane, it's one of those little prop planes. Like,
yep.
You know, you try to go to the bathroom. It's like you couldn't go and like treat yourself in there. Let alone join the Mile High Club if you're trying to bring a broad in there. Like fucking like the lady in the airplane putting fucking lipstick on her face. So yeah, Canada, man. I said great place. Can't recommend it enough. The hell was the other thing that I did there?
How was the movie?
That's Goon 2. If you enjoy, I knew you were fucking blanking. If you like Goon, you definitely got to see Goon 2. I know, like, you know, not everybody was a fan of Goon. I don't know why. If you like hockey, it's a fantastic hockey movie. A lot of goofy stuff. Had a real goofy charm to it, but you know, it also had a lot of good hockey stuff in it. I was, you know, like we mentioned, Jay Baruchel, who directed this one, invited me up. And it was fun, man. It was a fun movie. I'll tell you, Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn's son, Wyatt Russell, he plays the new bad guy in it. And he stole the movie. I mean, he was also in that movie, Everybody Wants Some, the one with the baseball players. That was kind of the spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused by Richard Linklater. He was also in that as well. But this kid, man, he steals the movie. He plays like that, you know, the owner's son who's got some issues with him. But he's got the long beard, the long hair, the big bushy beard. And he looked like his father. I ask him millennial again. His father, Kurt Russell, starred in this movie, The Thing, back in 1980. And Kurt had long hair and the beard. And it was like you were looking at him all over again.
So, all right, before we go.
Yeah.
I know this is something that Captain Cons wanted us to talk about. I was going to say it in the All Right Hamilton. I've been given a list of, I think it's 155 movies.
Yes.
I've seen about 60 of them.
Wow.
I'd say maybe a little more, a little less. We're going to have you add some to it.
Mm-hmm.
How long are you and Cons giving me to complete the list?
Oh, Jesus Christ. That's going to take years.
Years?
Well, 150 movies.
Well, I probably have 70 now.
Okay, 70
or so movies.
No.
And we'll go through and prioritize movies that you and Cons, you know, we'll stack it from important to least important, because, you know, Jaws 1 and Jaws 3 are on there. I haven't seen Jaws 3. Like,
wait,
I'm not going to watch
that. Cons has Jaws 3 on the list?
Yes, he does.
Yeah, wait, see, this is where we need to do a cross-reference. I love my boy Cons, but Jaws 3 shouldn't be on any must-see movie list unless you're like a shock movie completist. But I love my boy Cons. But yeah, this is why we need a little collaboration.
So we'll tweet out the movie list once you make your additions to it.
Absolutely.
And we'll go from there.
Yeah, we'll do that. Anytime, any movie collaboration stuff is great. And, you know, I love to spread the word about good cinema.
I'm trying to get cultured for you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, man, it's like I said, I had a guy asking about The Wire on Twitter today, and why can't I get into it? And I says, you know, you gotta, like, don't expect closure every episode. It's not NYPD Blue or something. You gotta let it breathe and use subtitles, man.
Exactly.
So, all right, quick one this week, but thanks as always for tuning in.
Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Stool Chicklets and on Instagram at Spittin' Chicklets. The Instagram page is really taking off.
So yeah, we're definitely
getting a follow there.
Getting some love. Give us follows and, you know, another thing, give us, review, subscribe, all that shit. Spread the word. We're doing good in Canada, doing good in the States, but we can always do better. So, all right, boys. Take care. Have a good one.
So far in 2017, Forbes and Podcast One have already launched 3 highly acclaimed shows. The Interview with Steve Bertone features the business world's most interesting names, like Adam Carolla, Twitter founder Sean Rad, and Hollywood's own Jessica Alba.
So I spent a lot of my childhood in hospital and hospital beds.
Under 30 with Steve Goldblum talks to the movers and shakers, like Nation Builder CEO Jim Gilliam and NFL Big Game winner Martellus Bennett.
Guys are afraid to be themselves because of their marketing deal.
And The List with Art of Charms' Jordan Harbinger.
We'll get behind-the-scenes insight and information that doesn't make the print cut.
Next up, Sports Money with Mike Ozanian talking to team owners, athletes, and industry leaders about the enterprise and money behind supreme athletic competition. Forbes on Podcast One. Not just entertaining, informative. Subscribe now at iTunes and don't forget to rate, review, and share.